The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening. It's nice to be here with you all. So tonight I wanted to talk a little bit about this idea of resistance or struggling or somehow, for me I like this word tussle, like getting into a tussle with our experience. And maybe there's many of us begin a meditation practice with enthusiasm and resolve, and we have this idea we're going to meditate every day, or we're going to have compassion for all beings, or maybe we'll never tell an untruth, a lie again, or something like this. And then something happens, and we lose steam for our practice. And then what we were once committed to and were very enthusiastic about can become a chore, or feels like a chore, or doesn't have the same juice to it. And then either we beat ourselves up thinking like, oh, I should do this more and don't, or maybe we just abandon the whole project of establishing a meditation practice. Or so this whole feeling or this experience of I don't really want to meditate is a natural part of practice. This is kind of what I want to unpack and explore a little bit today. Maybe for me, I'll say that this shows up as kind of like this 10-year-old version of myself going, I don't want to, you know, sometimes I have that comes up with this little inner rebellion or this feeling of, I don't want to in some kind of way. And it can be about meditation practice or about other things that I know would benefit me. And so maybe you have this as well, for whether it's meditation practice or something else. So there could be resistance to just getting to the cushion, just getting to actually meditating. Or there can be resistance that once you are meditating, there could be some resistance to your experience. So it's natural, as I said, that when we give instructions or we give some guidance to the mind, that there's a little bit of rebellion in the beginning, and sometimes later on in practice too, and that shows up in little different ways. But for example, when we're doing loving kindness practice and you are sincerely wish to be cultivating goodwill, loving kindness, care towards beings, and there might be this small little voice that comes up that says, I don't actually really feel goodwill. So there might be this kind of resistance to developing and cultivating this. Or maybe it's when you're doing mindfulness meditation and there could be this idea, or maybe it's just a fleeting idea, like, I don't care what I'm supposed to be doing now. I want to really think these thoughts. These are really juicy, or somehow we think that at that moment they're really important or something like that. Or also maybe some forms of Buddhism, they emphasize a lot what we call forms, the way that you walk, the way that you eat, the way that you sit. There's a kind of like a strict choreography. And there might be some resistance of behaving in particular ways. And so I'd like to suggest that part of the function, not the only part, but part of the function of why we do these practices is to elicit some of this resistance, is to help bring it to our awareness. And then otherwise, how would we know that there's these parts of ourselves that maybe doesn't have goodwill in the way that we thought we did? Until we really start to cultivate it, we see that there's something other than what we were imagining was there. or if they might not notice that when we are given some instructions on something to do, that maybe our first impulse is no. Maybe we would never notice that unless we were given these instructions or trying to cultivate these practices. So sometimes meditation practice is called a purification practice, cleansing practice, maybe. That language can be a little bit uncomfortable, purification. But the whole idea there is that it helps bring up into our awareness things that maybe we didn't know. And then we can work with them. And then we can, once we recognize that they are there, then we can shift our relationship to them and maybe not be pushed around. And maybe they, most likely they were leaking out of us anyway, but once we become aware, then we can work with them. And it, maybe working with them is something that we do in meditation practice, and this is something I'm going to talk about in this talk. Or maybe working with them requires talking with a good friend or talking with a psychotherapist, whatever it might be, some other settings as well. So this idea that there might be some resistance or some little bit of a struggle, as I said, is a natural part of practice. It's to be expected. It happens to everybody. It's not a character flaw or a mistake or an indicator that everything is going poorly. Instead, the Buddha said that there are four ways of practice. There is painful practice with slow insight. There's painful practice with swift insight. There's pleasant practice with slow insight, and pleasant practice with swift insight. And of course, all of us wish that we had pleasant practice with swift insight. But I don't know anybody who would characterize their practices that way. In fact, instead, I think many of us would recognize that, yes, there are some difficulties. But of course, whenever we want to learn something new, whether it's whatever skill it might be or whatever behavior it might be, there's always an initial period of as we learn or as we make a lot of mistakes and find our way with it. So one way that we can work with resistance, maybe I'll talk about even resistance to get to the cushion in the first place, is just to recognize that, of course, this happens. This happens to everybody. And so we can have a little bit of compassion for ourselves. We can recognize the humanity of this experience, especially in the beginning of our practice. It takes some effort to really support the development of this regular practice. And then once we kind of recognize the common humanity of it, then it might be worthwhile to reflect on what is important in your life. What is a worthwhile endeavor for your time and your energy? What is something that is worthwhile for you? So staying connected to our motivations, staying connected to our aspirations can bring a certain amount of energy. And if the aspiration or intention or motivation to develop a meditation practice is something that's meaningful for you, something you want to do for your life, it's worthwhile working with your resistance and using it as an opportunity to learn something, using it as an opportunity to gain some greater capacity to be with uncomfortableness or to be with things that are difficult. And as the Buddha pointed out, a big part of training the mind, which is what meditation practice is learning to deal with the skillful thoughts, learning to deal with the unskillful thoughts. And we can define skillful as that which does not lead towards suffering. and unskillful, that is those thoughts that lead towards suffering. So even if you haven't devoted yourself 100% to this aspiration of developing a meditation practice, it's valuable, it's important that to do the reflection, what is important for my life? How do I want to spend my time and energy? Because it's easy to go through our lives aimlessly without some clear direction or sense of what we want to do. And it's easy to let ourselves get sucked in by the media out there. They'd rather that you don't ask yourself what's important. They'd prefer that you have more of kind of a short-sighted view and live your life just with the sense of the what do you want in the next moment, to, so that you would buy more things or jump onto the bandwagon to dogmatically choose a particular side on any particular debate. So one thing to support us when we have some difficulty or some resistance just getting to the cushion is just to bring to mind what is important for us. And of course we can reflect on, remember some any benefits, bringing to mind any of the positive experiences or positive capacities that have arisen since starting the practice. It might be that there's been some more calmness, maybe some more sense of well-being, maybe during meditation, maybe after. Maybe it's easier to see the bigger picture if you have a meditation practice. If you know, if you've seen how things change in your meditation, it's easier to keep that in view when you're not in meditation. Maybe this translates into having some greater ease in your relationships, your relationship to yourself, your relationship to others, or maybe having a meditation practice really supports you in your commitment to serve others, helps increase your capacity to be with difficulties, others' difficulties, to have those difficult conversations, to hear those difficult things. I'll say that for me, that perhaps like many people, when I go for a walk or a hike or a run, I like to use an app that measures, you know, time and distance, basically. And at the end, this app always asks, you know, how was your hike, walk, run? And then I would just type in a few words. And then after doing this for some time, I just noticed I always had something pleasant to write, something really nice to write. And now I bring that to mind when I think like, oh, I should go out for a hike or a walk or a run or something. I remember how I'm always typing into this app afterwards something, how pleasant it was or nice it was or something positive. So is there a way that might support you to be in contact with the benefits of your practice so that it can support you when you don't feel like getting to the cushion, when it feels you feel like you're too busy, or there's just in some ways there's a lot of resistance, a certain amount of struggle to get to the cushion. So what might support you to remember some of the benefits? Something else that might support if there's a feeling of, I really want to get to the cushion, but I'm having a hard time. I'm using this expression, get to the cushion means just to meditate. Of course, it might not always happen on the cushion. And that is the next thing, is to remember that training the mind, learning about ourselves, increasing our capacity, doesn't only happen while we are in formal meditation. It's true, the purpose of meditation is to transform our minds, is to allow the mind to see things that it can't see without a meditation practice, and for us to gain some understanding. And with these seeing more clearly and the wisdom that brings, creates the conditions for insights to arise, and these insights can be transformative, are transformative. But transforming our minds doesn't happen only in formal meditation. For example, we can engage with loving kindness while going for a walk, hike, or a run, or riding the bike, going to the grocery store, driving the car, whenever. We can just, in a warm-hearted way, be wishing people well, sending goodwill, kind of like radiating goodwill out to either specific individuals that we're meeting on the way, or just in general, just to be radiating warmth. And this way, to be wishing that people be safe and healthy and happy, kind of helps create a groove in the mind, so to speak. So that it makes it easier and easier to have access to that well-wishing and that goodwill that can really serve us both in our daily life and in our meditation practice. We can extend some of that goodwill to ourselves when we're having difficulties. And of course, we can practice mindfulness in daily life. It doesn't happen only when we're on the cushion. While we're cooking, while we're cleaning, while we're brushing our teeth, while we're driving, while we're standing in line 6 feet away from the other people, we can just bring our awareness to the sensations of what it feels like to be there. So remembering that meditation doesn't only happen on the meditation cushion, in a way can take some of the pressure off that everything on the cushion is so important and has to be some special experience. Instead, it can just be a natural extension of what we had been doing intermittently, perhaps, throughout the day, or maybe we are mindful for most of the day. So that can help support some of the resistance to getting to the cushion. And then, of course, some of what can really support us when we feel like we are having some struggling, whether it's we are either in meditation, have already gotten to the cushion, or there's some hesitation about to getting there, is to let go of any unrealistic expectations we might have. Often unrealistic expectations, or maybe even all expectations, aren't so obvious in the front of our minds. Instead, they are often these kind of whispers of thoughts that are in the back of our minds, maybe not so obvious to us, and we don't really notice them until these expectations don't get met and feel the uncomfortableness of that. So one expectation that we might have is that we have this idea that there shouldn't be any thinking during meditation. There should be no thoughts during meditation. We might have this idea that that's what it means to meditate, but that, of course, that's not true. It can happen. It's kind of more of an advanced practice that thinking drops away. Most often what happens is maybe instead of our thoughts be the equivalent of writing a novel, maybe it just gets down to where we're writing only a chapter, and then maybe only writing a paragraph, or then maybe only writing a sentence, and then maybe a word, and then nothing. But this is a big progress, or this is a long path. So the point of mindfulness meditation is not to stop the thinking. The thinking will quiet down, the trains of thought will get shorter and shorter. But it's to train the mind to think in skillful ways, to incline the mind in skillful ways. So the Buddhist approach to thoughts, it focuses less on thinking about tracing our thoughts back to their origins, like we might do in psychotherapy, for example, but instead is noticing our relationship to our thoughts and noticing that certain types of thoughts lead to suffering and certain types of thoughts don't lead to suffering. And so it's not that they have to go away, it's just that we can use them as an opportunity to learn, and we can shift our relationship to them. So we can find a relationship in the present moment so that we're not just lost in thought, which might be leading to more suffering for ourselves and or others. But with practice, there's this increased capacity to be with everything that's happening in our experience, to be with our bodily sensations, the sensations of breathing, our emotional life, and this river of thoughts. So thinking can just be one more object of our meditation. We can be aware of it, rather than this idea that we have to get rid of it. Also, I should say that while having thoughts drop away is possible and does happen with concentration, it's not the primary goal of practice. So while we're meditating, and if there's a lot of thinking, we don't have to feel like, oh, we're not meditating. Instead, we can say, when we realize that there's been thought, just to very gently, simply come back to the sensations of breathing, if that's your anchor. And instead, recognize that this is what happens and that this is just part of training the mind. And then in this way, we can shift our identification from the thoughts where we're just completely lost in them. And instead, we can move to more of a greater awareness that recognizes the process of thinking itself and or the process of experiences. Just like our thoughts are coming and going, all of our experiences are coming and going. So thoughts don't have to be any different than the bodily sensations or emotions. And it can be an important place to have some insight, some learning about the changing nature of our experiences. So another unrealistic expectation that we can let go of to be a support for us if we find that we're struggling or resisting and don't want to practice, or we're in the midst of practice and we're finding some difficulties, is to let go of any unrealistic expectations that results will come quickly. We can, from the sutta passages I read earlier, we can recognize that even thousands of years ago, that when they didn't have as many distractions as we do now, they certainly didn't have devices that are beeping and notifying us all the time. They recognize that practice takes time. It can happen not quickly. And that insights may happen quickly, but practice may be difficult. And in fact, the Buddhist tradition holds the story that the Buddha had to live many, 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 many lifetimes in order to cultivate and perfect different qualities that allowed him to have the meditative experiences that he did. So that was introduced, we might imagine, to emphasize that things take time. And not only that the sutta passages are not so much a diary of somebody's personal experience. They're not a recording of somebody's practice history of how it went for them. In fact, it's often the opposite. Most often the opposite. It's an idealized version of somebody's practice. So of course we have this idea that it should be easy and or fast, because that's the way it's portrayed. As I mentioned at the beginning of the guided meditation, I'm sitting in front of Padachara, who was one of the foremost teachers at the time of the Buddha. She was recognized as being a very skilled teacher. And I'd like to read just a few lines here from one of her students that talking about Padachara. And in these few lines that she, there can be this impression that things happened very quickly. So it goes like this. This is, again, a student of Padachara's. With kindness for me, she, Padachara, ordained me. Then she advised me, urging me on to the ultimate goal. Hearing her words, I did what she advised. Her words were not in vain. I am now free. Makes it sound so easy and straightforward, right? But we can imagine that, right, it wasn't so easy and straightforward. In the same way that we don't learn to play the guitar or to knit or whatever it might be immediately, sometimes we forget that when we're first learning to play tennis, that there's so many balls that whiz right past us before we quite learn how to volley or playing guitar or the piano or knitting, whatever it might be, that in the beginning it just takes time to develop skill. So with these kind-hearted adjustments, recognizing that having resistance is a natural part of practice, some might even say it's a required part of practice so that we can learn from these things. Having compassion for ourselves when we recognize that there is some resistance or some sense of struggle going on. Reflecting on what's important in our lives and feeling the support of that. Reflecting on what benefits we might have already received from our practice, maybe even when it has been difficult. Examining any unrealistic expectations we might have. For example, these ideas that there should never be thoughts or that results should come quickly or somehow there should be a certain amount of ease with this. And of course, reminding ourselves that meditation doesn't only have to happen on the cushion, can happen in our daily life practice. So these kind-hearted adjustments can allow us to develop compassion for ourselves as well as others who are having the same thing. Allows us to recognize the humanity of others who are also struggling. Maybe it's not meditation practice exactly, but are having difficulties with something that they want to develop and cultivate and haven't quite got there yet. Sort of having these kind-hearted adjustments allows us to develop compassion for ourselves and perhaps even to pay it forward by helping others who are struggling, others who have resistance to doing what might be helpful. And paying it forward and helping others, and after all, is what practice is about. And in the Zen tradition, they have the saying of returning to the marketplace with gift-bestowing hands. So in this way, our working with any difficulties, our struggles, our resistance to even get to the cushion can be a tremendous benefit, not only for ourselves, but others. So may our practice together today, even if there has been some resistance or a little bit of struggle, may it be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Without exception. Thank you.